On this show where nothing is off topic, it's a very momentous night here on the program here. We start off hour one talking with a new author, Priceless Memories by the one and only Bob Barker, and we keep the momentum going strong here in hour two. Wrestlers are like seagulls from McMahon to McMahon, a gentleman that, a good chunk of my youth was spent watching him and his compatriots on Superstation TBS back in the day. He had a long and very distinguished career in that business. I could only be speaking, of course, of J.J. Dillon. J.J., it's truly a pleasure to have you on the FDH Lounge tonight. Thank you for coming on, sir.
Oh, Rick, the pleasure is all mine. Hey, to be on the same show with Bob Barker, I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah, this is a heck of a night. I mean, I don't get a chance for the adrenaline to stop flowing. I was talking to Bob in the first hour. I got you on now. It's going to be quite a letdown here when the show's done here tonight. But it's a pleasure to have you on. I tell you what, and I want to signal something that you said in your book here, and I got a copy of it. I want to flag something you said. I really thought this was good. And you may not have too many people point this out to you or not, but I'll tell you what. Back in the day, I'm telling you, and it's the result of a collective effort from a couple of you guys in helping to bring out the best in him. I was the biggest Ronnie Garvin mark, and let me tell you something. He was huge at my high school. He was bigger than Hulk Hogan at my high school, JJ. And for you to say in the book there the good things about him, I think it's so unfair with the revisionism, the way that this guy's got dumped on, and, oh, can you believe he was ever NWA world champion? Well, I can believe it because I was a fan back in the day, and he really was big. And you were right to point that out, that whether or not the title reign itself got booked that good or the circumstances made him look good or whatever, you're absolutely right that guy was just red hot at that time.
Well, the people that say or question whether he was deserving or not obviously were never in the ring with him.
Yeah.
If you were in the ring with him, there was no question as to his talent and his legitimacy. Ronnie Garvin's one of the greats from our business.
Oh, he was. He was just so tremendous back in the day. And again, that was such a great product. It was. I think the true wrestling fans would tell you probably the better product at that time, even though the then WWF was working at a more financially successful level and running more parts of the country. But everything that you guys were doing was just tremendous. And I know you said in the book, and I can believe that this is the case too, because you had a really good career before that. You went on to work off camera for a significant period of time after that. But as you said in the book, that's the period of time where people stop you on the street. I remember you, with the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, though it is a snapshot of my career, Rick, it is where I'm best remembered. But you're talking about that era. It was a great era too. The Horsemen speak for themselves in terms of the caliber of talent. But you also you don't draw big crowds. It being there just because your name is on the marquee. Who across the ring is just as important. And when you look at the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors and Magnum TA and Ronnie Garvin and the Boogeyman, Jimmy Valiant and Nikolai Volkov or Nikita Koloff, and I mean, you just go down the list. It was an incredible period in the business where the depth of talent on both sides of the rings was really, really deep, and that was a big factor, because when the fans came and bought a ticket, they knew they were going to see a quality product right from the opening bell till the main event was over.
Absolutely, and there are so many things I want to ask you about, not least of which something from this past weekend that you had attended, but a question about back in the day, since we're talking about that at this point here, this is an observation that I had, and I don't know if you would think that this is a coincidence or that there's a reason for this. Some of the big managers from that period of time, just the three off the top of my head where this example comes to mind, you, Paul Ellering, Jim Cornette, and having seen shoot interviews with the three of you guys, all separately, but I've also seen the shoot that you did with Jim Cornette. Jim Cornette's very yappy, hyperactive type character, obvious to see where that comes from. You, Paul Ellering, doing very cerebral type characters, maybe in different ways, but nonetheless coming from kind of a cerebral type place. Again, in real life, you can see where that comes from. The fact that characters now are so prefabricated from company management, there doesn't seem to be that kind of organic thing anymore. Is it a coincidence that we're not really seeing the big-time manager anymore because they're not doing it in an organic way like you guys did?
Well, I think it's a couple of reasons, Rick. I think the business has changed dramatically. Number one, you don't have the manager has to be there to fulfill a function. And at times in my career, managing people like Abdullah the Butcher or the original guy I managed, the Mongolian Stomper, you know, these are guys that their image was most effective when they didn't speak at all. So obviously they needed somebody to further the storyline, to talk about the upcoming match. So there was a definite need there. You know, the Horsemen were all established stars in their own right, but it was a chance for me to come across as a legitimate businessman kind of running a conglomerate, and it was all very logical to the people and the fans that were attending week in and week out. And the year has changed because back then you had such diversity of characters. I mean, Dusty Rhodes was very flamboyant, the American Dream. The Road Warriors, when that music hit, I mean, I remember being in the ring and I would get chills because you knew what was going to come through that curtain, and when they hit that ring, you better not be standing there, you better be somewhere else. Everybody was different, and sadly, as I look at today's product, which I don't follow with any regularity, there seems to be a certain sameness to everyone. Back in the day, we were extensions of our own personalities, and we had a lot of input into the creation of what went out over the air, and that's missing today. I can't imagine someone giving me a piece of paper telling me that this is what they wanted me to say because that's what they think my character would say. I mean, that doesn't work for me. You tell me what is important, whether it's an upcoming match, an upcoming event, a furtherance of a storyline, and then I can interject my own personality and in my own words, which makes my interview different from, as you point out, Jim Cornette, makes my interview different from Bobby the Brain Heenan or Precious Paul Ellering, and all of whom were successful in their own rights. I always consider Bobby Heenan to be the greatest manager of all time, and I'm a huge fan of Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express, and I highly respect certainly Paul Ellering as well.
Oh yeah, they definitely were all great. They brought different things to it. All of you, the managers of that period of time really did that. You had your own definitive strengths that you brought to it. You know, the mic work that just helped get over the angles and everything like that. It really was superlative. And it's something I want to ask you, but I guess it's kind of a two-part question before I move on from asking you anything, Horseman. I have the theory in my head that what we saw with the Attitude Era, when that first came into being, some of that, I think, as far as the Steve Austin being the big-time anti-hero and everything like that, it always gets portrayed as a product of that time, that of the late 90s. I look back and I think that stuff like that maybe could have worked earlier had it been given the opportunity. And one guy in particular that I really kind of wonder about, back around 92, 93, was Arn Anderson. There just used to be, I think after he left the Dangerous Alliance, there was a period of time there, I think, when he was a good guy there for a period. Arn Anderson, it just seems to me, is somebody that could have been killer in terms of the way the Andersons were embraced as sort of a cult hero sometimes, even when they were bad guys. Do you think that Arn or anybody else could have really, brought the anti-hero thing to the fore even before it really was big in the business?
I definitely feel that Arn Anderson would be a candidate. It's sad when you go back to that era. I think Arn never got the recognition that was due him at that time. I mean, here was a guy that was, a lot like me, and not the biggest guy physically. Maybe not the guy with the most God-given talent on the card, but nobody worked any harder than he did. Nobody put any more thought or preparation into anything and everything that he did. And it's only in recent years now that the industry is looking back and appreciating what a great star he was throughout his entire career. He could have worked in any era in any capacity.
Yeah, I was a big fan of the work that he did. I'm glad to hear that you agree on. I mean, I knew that you would because you obviously have an appreciation for what he does. It's just good to hear that from you. A gentleman who you worked with behind the scenes subsequently in the 90s, but when we were talking about this golden era of the 80s, you and he were working for different promotions much of the time. Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, I believe it was it this past weekend, you ended up, I believe, helping to induct him into a Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame.
Yes, I stay connected to the business in a couple capacities, one of which I am on the board with the Professional Wrestling Hall of Fame and Museum, which is up in Amsterdam, New York, and a guy named Tony Villano is the president, and he was not a wrestling fan. He just was the right person at the right place at the right time, and like I say, this past weekend was the 10th anniversary of the induction. And, you know, I could probably talk the whole hour about the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, but you really need to go there yourself. It's up in the area north of Albany, not that far from Cooperstown. And the memorabilia that's displayed there, the plaques that are on the wall, it's not about a popularity contest. It's not about politics. There's a legitimacy to everybody that's been inducted. And if you go to my website, jjdillon.com, you not only can get information on my autobiography, but if you go down the main page, there's a link there that takes you to the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and you can see what they're all about, and also the Cauliflower Alley Club, which is the other thing that I'm involved in. But last weekend, I had gotten a call from Paul Orndorff, who was voted in as part of this year's class, and he asked me if I would induct him, and it was with great pride that I agreed to do so. And so I got to see Paul and his wife this past weekend, and some of the other greats of the business. Chief Jay Strongbow was there, Baron Cicluna, Johnny Rods, Pete Sanchez, that I've known since I first started hanging around the business, and he broke in at a young age. I mean, we've known each other for 50 years. The Vachons, Paul Vachon was there. It's a great weekend, and the event was sold out. And I encourage any wrestling fan, as every baseball fan makes a pilgrimage to Cooperstown to see the Hall of Fame, I challenge every wrestling fan at some point to somehow get up to Amsterdam, New York, and make a pilgrimage to see that Hall of Fame.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned that, JJ, because I've been to Cooperstown. I've been meaning to get back there, and I'll have to make a mental note that while I'm in the vicinity, because that does sound pretty cool. That does sound like a great place to go visit, and I'm glad that you mentioned jjdillon.com, because I knew that it would have information on there. It's a great clearinghouse, of course, for information about your career, as well as your book, Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, from McMahon to McMahon. It is an outstanding book. I believe it was your publisher. They were kind enough to send a copy to me, and just the tales in there are just outstanding. One of the things that I wanted to commend you for in this, just from my observation as a reader, was that you didn't set about to settle any scores, anything like that. It was matter of fact, in there, whenever you had anything to say, like it seemed to pain you to point out in anything about Dusty's ego, even though that those are things that some people might consider to be fairly obvious in some ways. It kind of pained you to make your observations, but you wanted to be honest. You were honest without being sensationalistic. You weren't bitter about any things that have happened to you. I didn't realize until I read the book some of the twists and turns that have happened with you in the time since you left WCW earlier in the decade here, and your lack of bitterness, your positivity was just very striking to me, and I wanted to commend you on that, because it was just a great tone, I thought, that you had in this book.
Well, I appreciate that, Rick, and I have to give a lot of credit to my co-author and the publisher, Scott Teal of Crowbar Press, who also did Ole Anderson's book, and recently did Ivan Koloff and the assassin Jody Hamilton. He's a very respected historian. He is a great author. And there's a young man named Philip Varial who just did Lou Albano's book that was actually started as a proofreader, but actually knew more about my career than I knew about myself. And he interjected a lot of additional material and questions that went into greater depth in some of the chapters. So he earned a position on the cover as well. But I'm very proud of the book, because in the beginning I was reluctant to do it, but I told Scott Teal, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right or not do it at all. And he lived up to his word. And as you said, Rick, it was written with great honesty. And I tried to be balanced. You know, I have had a rocky exit from the WWF with Vince McMahon, but at the same time, I think I balance it by all the things that he did for me and all the things that I learned from him. And same thing with Dusty Rhodes. And, you know, if you're going to be honest in your assessment of other people in your mind, then you have to be willing to look in the mirror, too. And I think I tried to do that and, you know, talk openly about what I felt my strengths were and what I, where I felt my weaknesses were. And I'm very proud of where we ended up.
You really did, and it was striking. And in terms of being honest about yourself, you know, you mentioned some of the things about life on the road and some of the things that you weren't necessarily as proud of and might have been a bit hesitant about your children and grandchildren reading, but you felt like you needed to be honest, put it out there. Again, the things that you did and alluded to are probably a drop in the bucket compared to the lifestyles of some of these guys here. And I have to ask the question to you as an observer, if you think it's a nature or a nurture thing with some of the things that we've seen in the wrestling business. There have been more tragedies, you know, than you could shake a stick at here. You know, do you feel like the business attracts people who are predisposed to that type of thing when they get out there on the road and the temptations and all of that? Or are people just, is it just a coincidence that there's people that are in the business that have this happen? How do these tragedies basically keep repeating themselves over the years?
You know, Rick, I don't know that I can really adequately answer that because I think there have been so many that it would be difficult to make a case that it's pure coincidence. I think the lifestyle has a lot to do with it. It's not a lifestyle for everyone. And then, you know, when you hear guys talk about earlier in their career, you know, working for a $15 and losing money, or in some cases, the promoters used to say, well, you know, you appear on television, you have a television match, and it's furthering your career, and so this is an investment that you're making, so I'm not going to pay you for your time and to come and appear in this television match. I mean, there was a lot of things like that, and it's like anything else in life. I think, I know, you have to have a passion for what you do, and I started as a wrestling fan, you know, 50 years ago as a teenager in Trenton, New Jersey, and I discovered professional wrestling at a time when, you know, nowadays if you saw a guy walking down the street with tattoos all over him or a shaved head or wearing Indian feathers and war paint or bleach blonde hair, you know, you wouldn't even have to be in Times Square. You could be in any city in this country and you wouldn't take a second look. But to a kid in the mid-50s, it was like cartoon characters that really existed that came to life. And I just fell in love with wrestling and decided it's what I wanted to do. And I was fortunate enough to persevere, to chase my dream, and get by all the hurdles that one faces in any endeavor that you seek. And I just I was very lucky. I've had a phenomenal career, and I had a lot of help from a lot of people. And that was another thing about the book. It gave me a chance to single out people that helped me along the way. And the bottom line with wrestling, and it's still today, is that without the wrestling fans, there would have been no J.J. Dillon, there would be no Four Horsemen, there would be no professional wrestling. So I love opportunities like this, Rick, to come on the air and to always say to the fans, I thank you for your support of not only my career, but wrestling throughout the years. And I say wrestling fans, you know, they talk about NASCAR fans or football, basketball, but wrestling fans are the greatest fans in the world.
Well, we're all very grateful for you, JJ, and everything that you did in this business. You tell the story in the book with great humility about coming in as basically with the whole fan club thing with Johnny Valentine. I think what people appreciate when they hear interviews like this is the humility that you still project and your appreciation for the business. And the thing I'd like to ask you about here as well here is, if you ever could have imagined, particularly in recent years, with some of the things that you went through, a moment like you had last year on TV, because I'll tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, you were part of one of the most special moments of all time, and it really, that moment started with that reunion of the Four Horsemen when they called you guys out there, and then the other emissaries ended up coming out after that. But when you guys came through the curtain there, I mean, that where does that rate on the pantheon of your moments in the business?
Well, I can't think of anything any higher. I talk in my book about highlights of my career, and you know, going to Japan was a big deal. Going to Australia and the circumstances by which I made my only appearance ever in Madison Square Garden, where I had gone and bought a ticket as a kid. But, you know, the Horseman was just a magical time, and it's one of those things that wasn't laid out, this great detailed plan. It was a spontaneous thing that really, getting back to the fans, they're the ones that created it, really, and ran with it. And it was 20 years since that group had all been together, and it happened at the last minute. It was a phone call from Howard Finkel a few days before WrestleMania asking if I would be willing to participate. And, you know, how do you say no? Whatever past I've had with Vince McMahon, this was about the legacy of the Horsemen. This was about that moment. And with Rick, you know, having a great match at WrestleMania and hopefully still calling it a career, though there's talk of him coming back. And I hope, for the good of the profession and the good of Rick's health, that he doesn't do it. I mean, he's done it all. But when we walked through that curtain, I didn't know what the response is going to be because it had been so long. Even though Orlando was a hotbed of the old NWA days, the response that we got when they saw us, and I have to give Triple H the nod, too, because he really set it up for us in terms of introducing us. But the response that we got, the look on Rick's face, even though Rick knew that, you know, we were in the building, I think he was surprised with the response as well. And, hey, we all had tears in our eyes.
Oh, it was electric. It was a huge moment. And the last question I'd like to ask you tonight, JJ, in a non-wrestling-related capacity here, but just to get your observations as somebody who is seeing this close up here as a resident of the state of Delaware and actually someone who works for the state of Delaware, it's been much in the news recently here that it is going to be one of the few states in the country now to have professional sports gambling going forth here. And that's something that the commissioners of the major sports leagues have lobbied against a lot. I guess they don't have a lot of leverage against Delaware because they don't have a big-time professional sports team to take away. But what are the thoughts in Delaware about this? Is there a lot of optimism that you're going to pull a lot of people, say, from the Philadelphia area and people coming across state lines? You're already the state that doesn't have, I believe, a corporate income tax. So is this one more thing that is being counted on to really generate a lot of money for your state?
I think that's probably really the bottom line. I'm not originally from Delaware. I've been here now approaching 6 years, and I came here actually to take care of my ailing mother before she passed away about not quite 2 years ago. And this was her home. This is where she was from and where she and my father retired. So, you know, there's no sales tax here. The cost of living is certainly very reasonable. But Delaware, like a lot of other states, is now having tough economic times. And, you know, when the deficit is there, it's like, not to get into politics, but President Obama has got a thankless task right now of trying to get this country turned around. And, you know, he's going to make mistakes, but at least he's out there trying and doing something. And I think the sports betting here in Delaware is, though it's going to be controversial, if it's a way of bringing more revenue into the state to help balance the books, then, you know, I guess you can make the case where you got to draw the line somewhere, and where is that line? And but I think with sports betting, people can go to Atlantic City, they can go to Las Vegas, they can go with illegal gambling with bookies, but if people are going to gamble anyway, I don't think it's something where this is going to cause people to start gambling that wouldn't have the inclination to gamble to start with. So if it means more revenue to the state and take some of the pressure off here, then I say let's go for it.
Well, it's going to be an interesting story as it unfolds. And JJ, and I'm holding up for the camera here an image of the your book here of just an excellent book. Wrestlers Are Like Seagulls, from McMahon to McMahon. You mentioned, of course, jjdillon.com also, which is an excellent sort of hub for any information about your career and anything you've got going on. Anything additional that you'd like to plug here tonight, JJ, please take the opportunity.
Well, the book is not available in bookstores, so I encourage you to go to jjdillon.com, and you'll see the cover of the book right up at the top of the page, and you can go right to Crowbar Press where you can order it. As a way of saying thank you again to the fans, I have, since it first came out in 2006, signed copies for anybody that purchases the book, and no extra charge for that. I personalize it for those that want to give it as a gift or just for their own personal library. So you can go on Amazon.com and find it too, but we're not set up with Amazon.com to be able to autograph copies. So if you go to my website or write to Crowbar Press, you can get an autographed copy. I've yet to have anyone, and I encourage people to go to the review section on the part about the books and read what people have said that already have gotten the book and read it, and I think that might help you make up your mind. But I haven't had anybody disappointed. I'm very proud of it, and like I say, I'm still involved with the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, the Cauliflower Alley Club, and I know that Greg Price in Charlotte, who does the NWA Legends Fan Fest in August, and this is, I don't know how many years this is coming up, probably 5 or 6, and I know that he's trying very hard on that Friday to put together a reunion of the Four Horsemen, and my understanding is it's very close, and if it happens, that would be an unbelievable thing for us to all get together, photo ops and what have you, and it's no secret that Ole Anderson's health is not the best. He doesn't travel very much, so this might be the first time in many, many years that we're all together at the same time, and it could well be the last. So keep an eye on NWA Legends Fan Fest and see if Greg Price can make this happen, and if it is, it's the first weekend or so in August, and I think people from all over the world will come to see the Horsemen together for maybe one last time.
Okay, well, that's excellent. And there's some news that you just broke that people can pay attention to. So the NWA Legends Fan Fest, and of course, jjdillon.com. I'm sure you'll have information there. And I just want to thank you again, JJ, because, again, you're a class individual. Your appreciation for the fans is just really tremendous. We appreciate your humility and you making the time for us here tonight. Thank you so much, sir.
Well, I thank you, and I just want to give a shout-out to all the great fans in the Cleveland area on the FDH lounge on Sports Talk, and I've enjoyed this every bit as much, maybe more so than you have.
Well, JJ, we'd love to have you back sometime. It'd be a pleasure if we could do that.
All right, Rick, and keep up the great work, pal.
Thanks very much, JJ. Appreciate it. JJ Dillon, everybody. That is just amazing. From Bob Barker to JJ Dillon in one night.
Having the greatest night of your broadcasting career.
Oh, don't tell me.
This is the greatest night of your broadcasting career. Seriously.
So far, but I hate to think I'm peaking at this age, but but that's
best so far.
So far, let's just say so far.
Greatest night ever. So far.
So far, yeah.